What's up, everybody? New single from the Slackademics out, this one called Our Own Island.
Nothing to phone home about. You're just waiting for Godot. We're on our own little island. Tracy was in the sand.
This vibey reggae track is written by our drummer, Josh. Good job, Josh. I love this song, and honestly, it might be the most fun song we have to play live. Sadly, that doesn't help me understand what the lyrics are about or anything like that. Please give the track a listen and a share on the streamer of your choice. As I've mentioned before, the new Slackademics album, Pass Fail, comes out in April, but you can already pre-order it. Just $10 on our Bandcamp page. And the next Bandcamp Friday is March 6th, which means we don't have to pay Bandcamp any of their cut. On that capitalistic note, let's listen to the soothing sounds of one of our trumpet players, Max. Max, Max.
But there's no one, no one to see you through.
Imagine the song like sung operatically or like with a real like full voice and just like really humble.
But naked. How could I forget that I would
imagine if it was like, in a musical? Like, I don't know.
We could do it.
I just think that there's a lot of potential for interpolations of the song.
Well, when's the Shaggy jukebox
musical coming
out?
That's what we need. That's
out.
What the people want. Nicole.
And I'm Mark.
And this is Nevermind the Music. What are we going to talk about today, Mark?
Today, Nicole, we're going to talk about Norville Shaggy Rogers. What?
I have nothing in my ear.
You never hear me in your ear.
Oh.
You never hear my
no?
ear. Never once, no.
No? Okay, well, perfect.
No, I could probably find a way to route that, but then it causes us
to... Oh, you don't have to. I never noticed that. I always thought...
Should I leave this in? We've been podcasting together for like 2 years. No, a year and a half. What is it? No, just a little over a year at this point.
Yeah. We're almost at 100 episodes.
You are sitting a few feet in front of me and you never hear me or you in your ear. You just hear the music I pipe in. Do you need... You're not wearing noise-canceling headphones, so I wouldn't
think there's any
sort of problem hearing my pointy voice, but... If we want to keep iterating on our technology,
I think that it's fine.
I'm sure other people listening, podcasters listening, are going, he doesn't monitor in the headphones. No, because the way that I'm routing the music into the headphones, it would cause me to record a track. Yeah, nobody cares.
I don't think people care.
Okay,
sorry.
I may or may not leave this in.
You can do whatever you want, buddy.
Why don't you ask what we're talking about again? Well,
what are we talking about today, Mark?
Today we're going to talk about Norville Shaggy Rogers.
Okay, I'm in.
Honestly, I know he's an important cultural figure, but before today, I didn't know anything of his backstory. Did you know that he's from Coolsville, Ohio?
No, I always figured he would be from like Jamaica or something.
Okay, no, Coolsville, Ohio is apparently.
It's kind of a...
And before people called him Shaggy, he went by Buzz because of his haircut at one point.
But then it grew out and got Shaggy.
I guess so, yeah. Mm-hmm. He has some unusual hobbies like collecting decorated belt buckles. Did you know that?
No.
He's a vegetarian. Did you catch that? I didn't know any of this stuff until this weekend. He says like about as much, honestly, as you and I. But the fact that he says zoinks so often, I think, is a little weird. But apparently, and I just found this out, he adopted Scooby before he met Fred, Daphne, and Velma.
Hey, but you're doing something weird.
Wait, what do you mean? This isn't a bit or anything. What are you talking about?
I was like, what? This isn't matching up.
Wait, are we not talking about Norville Rogers? We're talking about Orville Burrell?
I guess.
Jamaican-American reggae singer?
Well, yeah. I'm talking about Shaggy, like, that hangs out with Sting and, like, does cool.
So you said, you put that we should do Shaggy in our shared notes doc.
You were thinking from... the show, the Scooby show.
I was, the Scooby show. That's what it's called, right? It's a famous variety show from the 70s. Yeah, yes. Uh-huh. We are not talking about Shaggy from Scooby-Doo, though there is a circularity here. Have you heard the Shaggy Scooby?
No.
Let's come back to it. Okay. So, folks, sorry for the bit. We are talking about Shaggy, which is to say, not Norville Rogers, but Orville Burrell and his song from 2000, It Wasn't Me. Shaggy at the very end there, yeah?
So it's Shaggy singing what we just heard, and then he, like, changes the tone of his voice?
No. That's the chorus.
Yes.
All the catchy parts of the song, and I want to talk about this,
okay,
are Rick Rock.
Okay.
So Rick Rock is a British-Jamaican singer.
Okay.
Who, you know, a lot of his sort of well-known songs, like, you know, Angel, right? That one has Ray Vaughan in it, right?
Okay.
So Angel was another big hit of his. I mean, okay, Shaggy, basically, I would consider Shaggy a three-hit wonder.
Okay.
So there's this song,
uh-huh,
which It Wasn't Me from 2000, which is actually from his album Hot Shot, which is actually his fifth album. Shaggy has 89 singles.
That's unheard of.
And so he has a whole career before and after this, but he really rises to prominence. What's the first Shaggy song you heard?
I don't know.
The first one. Because he's got singles like Oh Carolina, Hey Sexy Lady, were relatively well known, especially in certain regions. But Boombastic.
Oh, my gosh.
That is the first one.
Right?
So, like,
imagine
this song, 1995, hit number 3 on the Hot 100. I'm boombastic, really fantastic. Touch me, not me, but she says I'm Mr. Rowe. Romantic, really fantastic. She touch me, not me, but she says I'm Mr. Boom.
So all singles. He's never, like, had an album?
Oh, he's had. I mean, this was his fifth record.
Okay.
He's released 89 singles over the course of his career.
It.
And the other sort of the big three, I would say, this one also hit number one, also from Hot Shot, his fifth record, Angel, which this one has Ray Vaughan. He has a lot of guests do the catchy hook. She was there through my incarceration.
Yeah.
I want to show the nation my appreciation. Girl, you're my angel. You're my darling angel. Closer than my peeps, you are to me. Baby, shorty. It's like so cute, Ray Vaughan.
It is pretty cute. The guys that he collaborates with on this have, like, very light, floaty lyrical voices, kind of.
Yeah.
And he's got this really heavy kind of blah, 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 kind of.
Wow.
So, okay, about that voice thing. So,
What's his deal?
So, I'm going to actually play a clip from The Independent where he's in an interview. He's explaining that he made up the voice to, like, mock a drill instructor. So, he was in the Marines serving in the Gulf War.
Okay.
He reached, like, Lance Corporal.
Wow, Shaggy.
He was reduced in rank twice for being AWOL for going off base to play shows, though.
That's so ridiculous.
It's kind of cool, though. Okay, so.
It's kind of so super cool.
Take a listen.
One time, Mr. Lover. Yeah. But I got this voice by mocking drill instructors in the military. Because in the Marines, the drill instructors would go, "Hey, boy, drop and give me 20. Let's go, boy." And I would mock him as a form of joking because it motivated, you know, your platoon.
Wow.
So, like, he adopts this. Not all of his songs do that, but, like, kind of the first ones that spark off. He's does that kind of Kermit-y, apparently drill instructor voice. And that's, like, I mean, the first time I heard Boombastic, I'm like, what the hell is this guy doing? But
it's working.
But, like, the ones that became real big hits a few years later, he's kind of almost like background role, right? The main hook parts are sung by these other guys.
Does he have any, like, ballads? Does he ever, like, use his normal voice and just, like, show
He definitely does use his normal voice.
Right.
I don't have any queued up.
I'd be curious. It's just like T-Pain. Like, you hear T-Pain and you're like, oh, this guy's just relying on autotune. But then you hear him really sing.
We obviously talked about that. That's like whether he's using autotune or not, right?
But then he sings and it's like, wow, you're very, very good.
I'll find a clip I'll throw in that uses Shaggy's more natural voice. Hi, everybody.
Hi, Dr. Papany.
Mark here in the edit phase. So Nicole's actually onto something by mentioning the T-Pain comparison, because we spoke on our T-Pain episode about that legendary NPR Tiny Desk concert where everybody acted like they would be surprised that T-Pain could sing. There happens to be a Tiny Desk concert with Sting and Shaggy. More about his friendship with Sting later in this episode. And they do acoustic versions of three Sting songs, and the one I'm about to play you is Shaggy singing part of Shape of My Heart. This is what he sounds like when he's singing without the Drill Sergeant parody voice.
And if I told you that I loved you, you'd maybe think there's something wrong. I'm not a man with too many faces. This mask I wear is one.
It's kind of a bit he's doing. He's playing up, he kind of combines that drill instructor thing while playing up his, he's from Jamaica, but he moved to the United States pretty young. He plays up the Jamaican accent also at the same time. Because when he's speaking in the interview, you can hear his accent is pretty mild, right?
Right.
He essentially code switches into a Jamaican drill sergeant, right?
So weird. He's a fascinating character, Shaggy.
And by the way, the name Shaggy.
Yeah.
He had shaggy hair. So, but it's kind of a snake eating its tail. He has, in retrospect, sort of embraced the Shaggy Rogers Scooby-Doo connection also.
Okay.
To the point that he actually was on the soundtrack for the 2002 Scooby-Doo movie, which I have never seen. Have you seen?
Was that like the live action one?
Yeah.
I've seen it.
He does the version of the Scooby-Dooby-Doo, Where Are You theme in that movie.
Oh my gosh.
But
that's amazing.
I got to say, it's called Shaggy, Where Are You? I have to say the SEO on this song is terrible. When you look for like Shaggy Scooby-Doo, you get a bunch of clips of Shaggy from Scooby-Doo, right? But just for the record.
Well, as the kids say, get that bag, Shaggy.
Get that bag, yeah. And let's be honest, the drill instructor thing is better than if he just adopted the actual Shaggy voice.
Robert Roop, how do you look? I don't see any difference.
Oh my gosh, it's so good. Like, I hear that and I just like feel instantly comforted.
Yeah, even though I haven't seen Scooby-Doo for 30 at least years, right? Since I was little.
It's so good.
Man, reruns and syndication.
Yeah.
Think of how many shows we watched, not to get too off topic, since I did this to us by bringing up Scooby-Doo and a Shaggy episode.
Yeah.
How much of the stuff that was on when we were kids was actually from the 60s and 70s?
A lot, probably.
Like if you think of Looney Tunes, even older than that, right? Some of it older than that.
Yeah.
But Scooby-Doo, 70s, Flintstones is like, it was that late 60s,
Jetsons.
That stuff was all on, ubiquitous. Sure, there was new stuff too.
Yeah.
Thundercats or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or My Little Pony or whatever.
Yeah. Gem holograms.
That's right. Ugh. But so half good. Of it was also these old recycled.
Right.
It's like if 2000s era shows were all our kids watched on Netflix or whatever.
Well,
right?
Isn't it? Like my nephew's watching The Simpsons.
Well, but that's still on.
Yeah.
I mean, we watch The Simpsons still, which is wild. Like my kids will insist, my son will insist on watching a new one just to be a little more. And it's like, every time we're like, no, it kind of sucks. No offense to this. Not kind of sucks, but like,
I haven't seen anything past like probably season 10 or something.
Which is
you
know,
shot
we were
Mr.
in high
Burns.
School. Right?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a little earlier even than that. But like, there's this heyday we watch and everybody's laughing. And then he's like, let's watch season 30. And
season 30.
Like, I don't know. It doesn't quite work.
We watched the Treehouse of Horrors quite a bit. Just my kids like into
some of those are fun.
That type of stuff. But so we've watched all of those. So... yeah, man, Shaggy.
Shaggy. So, but I don't think our kids know Scooby-Doo. There would have to be a new Netflix. There probably is.
They know from the movies. I know for like Halloween. It's always like, maybe we could be all the people from Scooby-Doo. Yeah. But who's going to be Thelma? I'm like, I want to be Thelma.
Thelma the best? Thelma seemed like she was cool. I hear it. You don't need to write in, people. We know it's Velma. We say it right later in the episode. At least I hope so. Yes. We talk more about Scooby-Doo later in the episode. I don't remember, though.
Thelma was the smartest, for sure. Thelma had it all figured out all the time.
I don't think that's hard. I don't think that's hard in that quartet, plus the dog. I don't think anybody's
Thelma's like, come on, guys. Daphne, get it together.
So a couple other random things before we talk about this song.
Okay.
So I already mentioned he was a Lance Corporal in the U.S. Marine Corps.
Which is wild. Like, you wouldn't expect it. So good for him.
But yeah, but also, in 2007, I guess, like, honorary-wise, he was awarded the Jamaican Order of Distinction and the rank of Commander for Jamaica.
Interesting.
So I guess I'm confused. Which side is he going to, if Jamaica and the United States throw down, do we have a conflicting...
Maybe Shaggy will be the peacemaker.
Like, dual citizenship is totally a common thing, but, like, do people have, like, dual military service often?
I wonder, who would you default to?
But
I don't know.
Speaking of honors, Brown gave him an honorary doctorate in 2022.
That's what I need.
And you know who else got an... Wait, really?
An honorary doctorate. That would really solve a lot of my problems.
It would help you. You get a slight pay increase.
I could be a dean because I don't have my doctorate
You go
yet,
to another column on the grid. Although you're in a private school, so you don't...
I am someone that like wants a doctorate but doesn't feel like they need it and also lack ambition just generally. So I don't know.
It's a lot of work.
I think it's too late. I think I'm too old. I don't want to go back and do it.
There's like a cap when you apply. Like if you're,
you can't feel
like
if you
have responsibilities and you're over there. Yeah.
I just don't want to like give up time with my kid and my family, and my dog and Stardew Valley and all these things that are important to me.
I think whether the doctorate is worth it, people can wonder at my life choices and try to make their own decisions. You know who else got a honorary doctorate from Brown that same year? Nancy Pelosi.
So, oh,
apparently Shaggy did a lot of fundraising for a children's hospital in Kingston. So
that's what you have to do.
It's like a doctorate in humanitarianism
or whatever. Yeah, I don't know. I don't care what it's in. I just need the paper.
Yeah.
Attention, everybody.
Degree mills out there wants to send a full doctorate.
Yeah, I mean, whatever, man. I don't care.
Okay, so this song, once again, 2000 album, Hotshot, his fifth record, features Rick Rock singing the hook, hit number one on the Billboard Hot 100. Now, one of Michael Jackson's favorite songs.
Oh, that's cool.
Which is kind of random.
Weird, yeah.
And
like, also really problematic when you think of, like, the lyrics.
I think we
got
to talk about the lyrics
about.
Of the song, but, like, apparently to the point that Shaggy performed it at Michael Jackson's 30th anniversary concert.
Oh,
to the And they're, like, him and Rick Rock are, like, singing it at Michael. And...
That's
people
bizarre.
Who want to hear our complicated feelings about Michael Jackson, listen to our
back.
Episode on problematic artists.
You can predict what they are.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like...
Check it out. Yo, Mike. Mikey. You're the king of pop, my brother. And I heard this song. It's one of your favorite songs. You the original banger. You dig that? You dig that? But if you get caught, this is what you gotta say.
Listen.
One time, everybody.
You better tell her that you're sorry.
I mean, famously, Michael Jackson said it wasn't me.
Famously.
So
that's like his whole bit.
Apparently, Michael told Shaggy that this sounded like a song he would write, and that's why he liked it.
Oh, that's kind of nice.
I cannot imagine a song. Maybe the melody.
The melody. Yeah.
So, okay, Michael likes it. Shaggy probably likes it. Lots of people liked it. You're the one who said we should do this song. So before we jump into what I want to talk about here.
No recollection of that.
Why? You could probably predict, look, this song is fun, but you could probably predict this was not what I was listening to in the year 2000.
No. Why did I? I'll have to go back and check the notes. I think I was thinking about, like, Denial a lot. Probably was listening to Doechii quite a bit at that moment. And I was thinking about, like, cognitive dissonance, probably. I wanted to get there. And I had, like, an idea about Denial and cognitive dissonance.
So it
that
was
sounds
the lyrics.
Like me. It was the lyrics,
So was this... Where were you at with Shaggy as a fandom? Were you into this song when it came out?
I liked it when it came out, but I would never admit it to anybody. I'm more into Shaggy now. I think his relationship with Sting is, like, really interesting now. And I respect Sting a lot, like, as a musician and a human. And like a sex icon almost, hot take. But I really was interested in their relationship.
So like what? So I don't have anything to say about Sting and Shaggy.
Oh.
So tell us.
They like, they vibe. They hang out. They like do tours together. They sing together. They're like all, they had a year or two because of some projects they were working on that they were always together and did a lot of media together. And they had a real, I'm going to say like Ariana Grande, Cynthia Erivo vibe in interviews. Like really like intimate and cozy,
yeah.
in a way that seems so genuine and almost lovely. And they were like this mixed match, but like they...
It's like a bromance, very
right. much. And yeah. I was just really intrigued by that. But I like that it wasn't me. I like the denial aspect of it and the cognitive dissonance aspect of the song and how he's like making jokes about infidelity and like writing it off. I think I'm very interested in that.
If you take this song as a story, it is crazy.
It's crazy.
And I obviously I've got some musical stuff to talk about, but we have to talk about. So did you hear or did you read where he got the kind of idea for it?
Tell me.
So it's an Eddie Murphy routine from Raw. Have you seen Raw?
Yeah. Okay.
So Raw, by the way, a lot of it has not aged well,
including this segment.
Yeah. I'm not playing much of it, but I want to show you. There's a segment called No Loyal Men that is this guy basically talking about women who catch him and he can kind of just deny it.
Right.
Because I guess in the Eddie Murphy, it's like the guy's so good in bed, the woman will put up with any amount of infidelity. Here's a little bit of
okay.
Eddie.
He got busted coming out of another woman's house. His woman saw him come out the house, knew that the woman lived there, and then said shit, wait till they got home, walked in the kitchen and said, what the hell was you doing in that bitch's house today? You know what the man said?
Wasn't me.
I looked right in your face!
Wasn't me.
Just like the Shaggy song.
And
just
it's
like
even
Shaggy said.
That's right. The rhythm, it wasn't me, is like basically exactly.
Yeah.
So let's walk through this for a second. So the guy's cheating on his girl.
Yeah.
She catches him, but literally catches him naked on the bathroom floor. Also, I'm reading lyrics here.
Yeah.
She caught me on the counter, saw me banging on the sofa. I even had her in the shower. She even caught me on camera. She saw the marks on my shoulder, heard the words that I told her, heard the screams getting louder. She stayed until it was over. So this is multiple instances, multiple locations. This wife or girlfriend is following them around in the house, catching him over and over again. And despite all this, it wasn't me. This guy's like the worst.
It's the worst.
Because it doesn't sound like they have a agreement.
Yeah.
Right. It seems like
this
is not
like they have an agreement.
This is not a thing that's like okay well, in their relationship.
The catching presumably. Part. I
the
mean,
catching,
yeah.
right? It implies that, right? And I have to appreciate that Shaggy did not cast himself as the bad guy in this.
Nice.
He's the guy saying, tell your girl it wasn't me. So he's like a bad influence buddy, but he's very much like, hey, if anybody gets the real hate mail here as a bad guy, it's gonna be Rick
one.
Rock.
Yeah. Yeah, it's Rick Rock. So,
and we talked about this when we said we're gonna do this episode. While prepping, it's like, can we please talk about the least likable protagonists in pop songs,
this
please?
Is one of them.
So after this episode, we are going to talk through, as a sidetrack, some of our favorite,
least likable.
Least favorite. So this is like, obviously not an original thought that this character is so terrible. The writer for Slate, Josh Levin, in 2007, coined the term the Shaggy defense.
Oh, gosh.
When talking about R. Kelly, who... in that era was denying this. Obviously, this story keeps going until the 2020s. R. Kelly's denial of child pornography charges despite obvious facts.
Oh,
right?
Gosh.
Just saying it wasn't me. And in a modern context, to me, this like also resonates, not to get political, but like fake news allegations. Like it doesn't matter what's out there. Oh, it's fake news. Right. And nowadays, Shaggy could have said, oh, it's a deep fake. You didn't see me, even though I was banging her on the counter.
Right. Ugh. It's so tough out there. For Shaggy's, you know?
Is Shaggy...
for Rick Rocks.
What would Shaggy Norville Rogers, Shaggy from Scooby-Doo, would he give the same advice?
He probably would.
It wasn't me. Just deny
it? Yeah, actually, that tracks.
Just get really high and just pretend you don't remember anything.
You never saw him get high, though, which is the curious thing. It was just implied.
I think he was very much a parody, supposed to be a parody of like a hippie stoner, though, right?
A 1,000,000%,
but like probably from the perspective of the Squares... like, I'm trying to think, I don't know anything about the animators. Like, are they making fun of Shaggy or are they making fun of Fred? Like, they're both caricatures of, like, different parts of the United
States. I think they're making fun
of
everybody. And, like, Daphne, they're making fun of, like, the pretty, like, popular coded girl.
Like, who do the creators of Scooby-Doo see themselves as? Scooby?
Probably Thelma or the villains.
The cranky
old man.
That's right, yeah. The guy who would have gotten away with it if it weren't for these pesky
meddling kids.
Okay, so do you want to talk us through denial and dissonance or all that?
Yeah,
or should we
I
talk
would
music?
Like to.
Okay,
yeah,
let's do it. We've been talking about lyrics.
So the reason I remember now, the reason I was sparked by this song was this idea of like moral disengagement, which is like, this is a stretch to make a connection, but I think we can do it. Are you familiar with that term? Like moral disengagement? Would you have any sense of what that means?
I would have to like back invent the term. Like I could figure out what I would think it means, but I've never heard it defined.
So it's this idea that you can diffuse responsibility for something that you know is wrong by like blaming somebody else or like saying someone else told you to, so you don't have to take ownership over it. So
is this like a Nuremberg defense kind of thing?
It's very much a Nuremberg defense type of thing. Yeah. Like
which as I understand it, is like, I was ordered to do that, so don't blame me.
Yeah. Like I was just doing what I was told.
Yeah.
Right. So it's not really my fault. I have like plausible deniability.
Right.
Or I don't have to have
plausible moral lack of culpability.
Right. But like, is that true or not? Like,
I mean, they hanged those guys, so no.
Right.
Right.
Like, and like the thing is, like, can you, if someone tells you to do something wrong, you have agency and free will to say like, no, I'm not going to do that wrong thing. I'm going to stop. Right.
Yeah.
So I think I was thinking about that with this song a little bit, but I think the better thing to focus on is this idea of denial in general and how we use denial as a coping mechanism. And I wanted to get into this idea of Rick Rock and saying it wasn't me. Is he denying it to his girl? Or is he denying it like in himself to like try to change how he views himself as a person?
To like save face for his own kind of self-image.
Right. To like, is he trying to like mask his own behavior? So like, it wasn't me because he's ashamed of what he's doing. And that's what I was interested in exploring, is like the shame aspect of the song and like the denial aspect.
It's definitely framed as a conversation between the two friends.
Right.
Right. Not him actually telling the girlfriend this stuff, right? Like, to what extent does he actually go through with this and lie about it?
Right.
As opposed to, this is him working it out and convincing himself to go do that. Because the bridge, and I want to kind of connect this to some musical stuff later, but the bridge is where he's, I'm sorry for all the things that I've done. Like, he's actually kind of like coming. This is a good example, folks, of like what a bridge can do in a pop song. There's often, the bridge is often the point of largest musical contrast. So like, think like song has a verse and then a chorus and then a verse and then a chorus. And then you have the bridge, which is different coming back to the chorus. But oftentimes lyrically, the bridge is also the sort of, but on the other hand,
right?
Like, you learn the person actually wronged the person they're mad at, or you learn the person actually feels regret for this thing they're singing about. Like in this case, that's what's happening. The on the other hand, we get this glimmer into honesty in this, I guess, conversation with his buddy. But is he saying that out loud to his buddy, or is that his internal monologue fighting with denial or whatever?
I think it's his internal monologue, and he's like, he's thinking, how do I get myself out of the situation? And maybe denying it, if I deny it, it's going to do three main things. And denial as a coping mechanism does three main things to serve us. It reduces immediate emotional pain, right? The immediate emotional pain of dealing with, this girl's going to break up with me and ruin my life and burn all my sneakers or whatever. I'm conflating some left eye stuff. Denial also helps preserve our self-image. So when we deny something, we maintain our sense of self and maintain this idea that like, we are a good person.
Yep.
We are morally grounded and solid. And then it also prevents, and from a Freudian perspective, denial is meant to like prevent this like overwhelming subconscious anxiety from building. Like, if we just repress it and deny it and say, it wasn't me, I didn't do it, it like prevents us from feeling anxious.
How is that different from the second, the sort of your own sense of yourself responsibility?
Because anxiety is more of like a physiological response.
Okay.
And self-image and self-concept would be more of a, like a psychological response. So we feel physiological anxiety as a reaction of our nervous system.
So it's one, the material consequences of the act. Two, the internal psychological consequences of the act. Three, the internal physical consequences.
The physiological consequences of the act. Anxiety is mental and physical, like that's how I kind of quantify those three things. So when we suppress things and when we deny it, it like takes the immediate instigating feeling and like buries it deep in the surface, so you never like actually feel it. And Freud would call that denial or repression, where we just push that feeling deep, deep down inside. But it's very Sorry, Shaggy and Rick Ross. It's a really like lowbrow and primitive defense mechanism, denial. It's well, like so basic.
It's
and,
like kindergartner caught in the cookie jar kind of.
Like, I didn't do it. Like, yeah. We saw you, effing saw right. you do it. Yeah. So like, you know, so it's a really like idiot way. It's a real idiot way to cope is just to deny it.
Right.
Right. And that's what we're seeing here. These two idiots trying to convince a woman that she didn't see what she saw, which is also like psychological gaslighting and just gross toxic male behavior.
We've been talking a lot about apologies in my household in the last few weeks, just due to issues with, you know, growing children
right.
and
parenting,
trying to model and talk about, you know, my wife uses the sort of banana split. I don't know if she came up with this or what, of like, the ice cream is saying you're sorry, but the banana on top is like telling how you're going to make it better. And the cherry is there's like different pieces. Like okay. The cherry is, I'm trying to remember, I don't know which piece of sweet is which, but like
there's
also the tell us how it will be different in the future, mm-hmm. explain what happened, like acknowledge the other person's feet. These are all the pieces. But like
that's
all
so
of that presupposes that you even admit that it happened at all.
Right.
And yes. It's so hard to get like young minds to like understand like how do I actually show contrition and show atonement? But if you don't even
admit
you don't even have the bowl that the banana split is in, if you're saying it literally didn't happen, I deny it.
You
right?
sound like such a healthy household. My kid, and you know, kids I'm around will often know that they did something wrong because they can feel it in us and they'll say, I'm sorry. But then my response is, you're sorry for what? For what? Because like, say what you're sorry. You know that you did something wrong, but like identify what that wrong thing is.
Well, that's exactly what it is. And that took 40 minutes. So like, no, I mean, it's exactly like, what are you sorry for? Tell it us in your own words.
Yeah.
And then it's like, okay, well, remember when mom brought up the banana split a month? Let's talk about that again. Like, and so the sorry came pretty quickly.
Yeah.
This is nothing epic or whatever. No school was burned down. just, you know, rude.
Yeah.
Conversation or whatever.
Stay tuned.
And like, it's going to get worse.
Yeah.
But it was the follow up to the sorry, like show us that you're actually sorry by explaining what happened.
Right.
And like, and telling us about what's going to be different in the future. That was not an easy, that did not come. And how many years have we been talking about this? Right.
So
you say we're healthy because we're having the conversations.
And
but
that's
it's
more
not
than most people do.
Yet, you know?
Right. Well, it's all like, it's a long con, this parenting thing.
Hopefully.
And I think another thing that you're talking about and also comes up in the song is this idea of like avoidance of responsibility. The song covers a lot of like human behavior things that are interesting to me. So we have this protagonist avoiding accountability with this like Eddie Murphy themed mantra that aligns with his own self-concept that he's a good person and he wouldn't do anything wrong. It wasn't me. And also assumes that consequences matter more than like the choice. Like he made a bad choice, but the choice he doesn't have ownership over. It's just like he's trying to address the consequences, not the choice in the first place. And that is just a really interesting human phenomenon that I observe, that people will often run the red light and then worry about how they're going to get out of the ticket.
Right.
Like you should have been worrying about that in the first place. So this like moral disengagement piece comes up again.
And also, of course, the like negative effects of what he's caused to the other person is not really a part of this at all. Maybe that bridge section gives it a little bit of space, but yeah, it's not exactly an expression of a healthy psychology, but it's also done. I mean, it was inspired by a comedy routine, right?
So it is a comedic study of like this phenomenon of like cheating and then lying to your partner about it and gaslighting your partner about it, which is like arguably a very unfunny situation, right? From a female perspective, but the male perspective like jokes about it, especially in pop culture, especially at this time and place that this song was written. So that's why I think I want to focus on this song, because it covers a lot of different like gender constructs, moral constructs, constructs about repression and denial and self-concept that are really intriguing. And Shaggy's an interesting character, and I think him and Sting kiss each other. And I'm curious about it.
You should ask him.
Sting, right in.
Let us know. Shaggy,
right
in.
Sting. Shaggy, we've had enough.
And that's cool. I mean, as
that
long as...
very cool.
Look,
very cool with it.
Unless there is another partners involved that do not consent, in which case, you guys got to come clean. Don't deny it.
Well, that's what I was thinking. Like, that this is maybe... this song is foreshadowing Sting and Shaggy's relationship.
But Can't there be bromance that's not full-on romance, though?
Yeah, of course there can be. Just like there can be female friendships that aren't sexual. Yes. Men can be friends with each other. And that friendship can have intimacy. And it doesn't have to be physical intimacy. You are allowed as a male
to be vulnerable
and intimate.
But you are saying you think there is physical intimacy.
I'm
in this
hoping there's physical intimacy. Right. I'm like, I want that for them.
Sting's European too. There could be some just like kissing on the cheek at
just
least.
Just a little bit.
I don't know. You heard it here first, everybody.
I don't know. I just think they're cute and I'm into it. That's all I'm gonna say.
Do you think a song like this? We're not almost done with this episode because I have to talk about music a little bit.
I can't wait.
Do you think a song like this that's sort of a parody of this behavior is one of those instances where like it furthers and glorifies the behavior in a way that is kind of like toxic or sort of is a cautionary and makes you look stupid enough if you're like this to actually maybe do some social good?
The first one.
You think it's sort of bad? Yeah.
The first one.
I mean, people have done studies on like parody not really working, right? Like satire, like at the end of the day, like, God, I don't remember the context, but there's some parody sketch on some show from the last decade or so in which John Hamm was in blackface.
Okay.
And like, I think it's a parody and it's supposed to be mocking whatever. But like, at the end of the day, there are GIFs out on the web now of you in blackface as a famous actor can get shared by people who like
out of context that want to
bring us back to minstrelsy. So like,
right.
You lose when you do a parody like this, you lose control of what it's supposed
to
mean.
I think you're giving, you know, us in the early 2000s, right, a lot of credit that we saw this as satire, because I don't think people were like, oh, this is just like Weird Al. Like, this isn't, people didn't read this as a parody when it came out, I don't think. Maybe like the Eddie Murphy, if they knew the Eddie Murphy material, they might have. But like, I didn't know that, and I would be one that would.
And I don't even know, is the Eddie Murphy routine a parody? Like, it's funny. It's jokes, but I don't know what the moral of, I haven't seen Raw in years, but like, what's the moral of that segment?
Right, is there like, it just ends after that bit.
I don't think
like,
he ends saying guys are assholes. It's like, guys are, this is the way it is, right? He's sort of just.
Yeah, but that's what you're talking about, like clipping John Hamm, the image of him in blackface. Like, you can take anything and just take the snippet out of context and play it, and it makes you sound like a dick, right?
Right.
So we never give ourselves the full reveal. Like, we never give ourselves enough time to get to the moment that we can look back at like the big picture and realize that it is just like the creepy gardener with a mask on, you know? I'm trying to get back to Scooby-Doo.
I was like, what the hell are we doing? Creepy gardener. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I'm trying to like get back to a Scooby-Doo metaphor for like punctuation. What do you got? This is what I have for Shaggy.
This is important. Did Scooby-Doo, important. Was there romance in Scooby-Doo? Did any of the like, quartet date?
I mean, I feel like Daphne and, what's his name, Chad?
He is a Chad, Fred.
I feel like they had to have.
I mean, certainly society was telling them to.
Well, I feel like it was implied.
I don't know. We have some Gen Xers in our listenership
You
were the actual, like, weekly, whereas I saw it when it's dawn, I watched the show. But it was not a part of my like identity in the same way because we were a little.
Imagine if it was Thelma and Fred, though.
Sure, I mean, why not?
I think that that's more believable.
There was a lot of social pressure in the 70s, probably for that not to be what it would be. You know?
Well, of course, that's why
against Fred.
Maybe Thelma and Daphne. We don't know. Maybe Fred and Shaggy. Who knows?
But like such a mixed composition quartet.
Like, how do they get
plus
together?
A talking dog? That's already like transgressive in the sense that like they're in this hippie van. The like football hero. And the like model type with the bookish nerd and the stoner are all friends, like best. They started a business together.
Heterogeneity in that friendship.
Right.
Group.
And I would wonder, like, is Fred's dad really disappointed
or
that
maybe
he's
Fred's
doing
dad
this?
Is like, you know what? He needed a break from those jocks. Right. Like, hang out with the nerd, solve some mysteries.
Well, and hang out with Velma. Like, ha, there it is. I said Velma, not Thelma. See?
The nerd solve some mysteries.
Well, and hang out with Velma, like you're gonna learn. Because, but Fred was a good. I don't think Fred was a dumb jock. I think Fred was like, football hero and president of the student council.
He was like
kinda.
The Zac Efron of his generation, Zac Efron, but Troy Bolton.
No idea who's Troy Bolton.
Oh my God, from High School Musical.
Yeah, see, I haven't seen High School Musical.
Well, it's a coming of age story of this young man played by Zac Efron,
right?
Troy Bolton. Who is on the basketball team. His dad's the coach. He has a lot of pressure to live up to the self-concept of a high school jock. But he's got a great singing voice, and he sings at this New Year's Eve karaoke show with Vanessa Hudgens, and they kind of fall in love, and then, but they don't know it yet. And then first day of school happens, and she's a student at the school, and she's like on the math team, and she's like a nerd trope, but she auditions for the musical, and he auditions for the musical, and then they have to like shed their original self-concept of the jock and the nerd to like sing this lovely duet at the musical and like fall in love, and they like change the whole school's dynamic and break down a lot of existing social schemas by like being in the musical together. So Fred is like a young Troy Bolton, or the Troy Bolton of his generation, because he's shedding the trope of his burly jock to solve mysteries with nerds and a hot redhead and a talking dog and a stoner.
Can we talk about
it's worth keeping in.
Yeah, okay. Can we talk about music on this song? So,
yes.
I this was not my scene at all, but like I associate this with the co-ed dorm shower.
College
dorm, because it hit 2000, right? So I started, this song was hit probably when I was a college freshman. My college had these big dorms, and you had a co-ed floor with co-ed bathrooms and everything. And somebody would always, it was just a very awkward
mortified
scene.
Mortified by that.
And there was always pop radio playing. That was my only way of interacting with pop radio. That's the only reason I heard a song like this, but it would be on all the time. So I associate it with like awkwardly hurrying through a shower.
And this is like, if you're going to have a co-ed shower, this is not the soundtrack for it.
Right. That's a good point. I never even thought of that. But I don't dislike this song. It's just very much not my scene from the era.
I get it.
But upon listening to it, after I saw your hastily written iPhone notes doc saying,
remember,
let's do Shaggy. What I found was that like part of what makes this song work is that it's this storytelling, but that we're taken through the story by really, really effective rhythmic pacing.
Okay.
Like in the sense that a movie has good pacing or a novel has good pacing, you're brought along from section to section of that story, right? And I think we're brought along from phrase to phrase through interesting rhythmic composition, not of the beat and all that, but of the vocals specifically. And this is essentially, we've already implied it, it's a Liszt song.
Okay.
It's a song like when you started listing off, okay, here's the first form of denial. I'm thinking in my head, perfect. It's a Liszt, right? Because he's listing off all the terrible things he's done, right? And Shaggy then chastising him with his own, like, why'd you give her access to your villa? Like that's a line I never understood what he was saying until I looked up the lyrics. And the rhythm kind of pulls us through. It kind of propels us, right? And I think that is really cool. Let me kind of show you what I'm getting at here. Let's start just by listening to the instrumental riff that pretty much underpins the entire song. So like, if I could highlight a few aspects to that, that kind of gives us the fuel for the rest of what I'm talking about. There's this guitar part. Bum, ba, ba, dum, bum, bee, da, da. It kind of divides in two parts. And the first is kind of funky. The second is more square. So listen to what I'm talking about. The guitar, the first half of the measure is going to be kind of more syncopated, more offbeat. And then the second half is going to be what we call straight eighth notes. So we'll go do da da da, which is sort of funky. And then ba 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 is the second half. Da 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 da. And interestingly, we have a big accent on beat three. Ba bum ba dum boom da 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 three da da da. And so it's this kind of lopsided thing that pulls us forward, and this is the rhythmic groove of the entire song.
And it does like pull you forward. It pulls you forward like into the story and into this narrative, and kind of gets you ready to settle in and hear this Liszt that they're about to present.
Sure. Thank you for just showing understanding by repeating the thought
that's
back
what,
for listeners.
This is what therapists do.
I've said it. She said it. Listeners, you can turn to somebody on the subway that you're listening.
You say it.
And you say it to them.
And that's what the rhythm of the song is doing.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. They definitely drill the point home in the song. So this is actually an interpolation.
Oh, I love that word. I say it all the time.
So you say it all the line and all the time in pluribus.
I always thought an interpolation is like a cover, but not really a cover.
Right. So interpolation, I did not say this publicly, but I sent Nicole a text. She shouted out, hey, Mark taught me this word interpolation before she chose to use it incorrectly in one of her episodes she did last month with David.
I just didn't know that I was incorrect.
Yeah, so a cover is when you just do a song written by somebody else, okay?
Yes.
So an interpolation, okay, think of a cover on one extreme and a sample on another extreme.
Okay.
Sample is when you're literally playing back somebody else's recording in your song.
Okay.
So this is an interpolation of a 1975 war song called Smile Happy, which I'll play in a second.
Okay.
If they did a cover of it, they would just literally perform Smile Happy. If they did a sample of it, they would just play the war recording of Smile Happy behind this beat. An interpolation is you re-recording Smile Happy within your
so
context.
So like Miley Cyrus, I Can Buy Myself Flowers is an interpolation of the Bruno Mars.
Is that an interpolation? What's a
songs? Because if I was
I
your man,
I should have bought you flowers.
Well, yeah, the Miley Cyrus flowers is an interpolation of Bruno Mars's "If I Were Your Man" because she takes the lyrics and kind of changes them around a little bit and adds her own flavor to them.
I think musically, though, it's completely distinct.
So it wouldn't be, even though she's like cribbing the lyrics.
She's like that's like a lyrical homage. I think that song I would say maybe is more of an answer to it, right?
Well, lyrical homage.
So think like, okay, think like, I don't know why this popped into my head, but a classic interpolation that I think of is like Dr. Dre's album, The Chronic.
Okay.
And there's tons of bass lines and beats from Parliament, Funkadelic,
okay, yep,
the funk band, but they're not sampling of it. They are
playing,
having a bass player replay it.
Okay.
And some of that is honestly because it's cheaper. You have to pay license to the songwriter. You do not have to clear the rights for the sample itself.
So is interpolation just a workaround to steal of people's material?
It's not steal. I mean, you're supposed to still pay.
You credit them.
Like if we looked at the songwriter, we're going to talk about plagiarism and stuff in a future episode.
I'm teasing it.
But I'd have to look to see who the songwriter list on the song is, but probably whoever wrote that war song is given some partial credit.
Well, on that plagiarism episode, we're going to really need to go into interpolation too, because I feel like it's a gray area.
Well, it is, but it's like, it's fundamentally like, are you doing that person's song? Then it's a cover. Mm. Are you using that person's recording? Then it's a sample. Are you re-recording to sound like that person's recording? That's an interpolation.
Okay.
It's like somewhere between a cover, but like if you interpolate, let's say, you interpolate this guitar part from, let me just play you Smile Happy, by the way. This is War, the funk band. And here's the riff, and it wasn't me.
Oh, yeah.
So it's just the bass line.
Right.
It's not the guitar part, none of the vocal line.
When you first played it, I was like, this doesn't sound the same. But then when you played It Wasn't Me, I was like, oh, it does.
It's just the bum, 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 bum. And so the thing about a cover is if you just did Smile Happy, that is a song by the guys who wrote it in War. You're paying them the full thing. Like if you got a clearance to do a sample for this, you would pay a fee.
Okay.
If you did an interpolation, you would also do some kind of a songwriting split usually.
Sure.
But with just this little bass line, it's probably like a small sliver.
Yeah.
What do you get? 10% of the, maybe? It depends on how big of a part it is. Like sometimes, think like Ghetto Superstar.
Turns on the D-Lo.
For Islands in the Stream or whatever it's called, that Bee Gees song, that was like Dolly Parton, and who did she do it with? The original hit.
But no idea.
You don't know that song?
I know the song.
Okay, yeah.
But I don't know.
That is an interpolation because it's not just playing Dolly Parton singing it, or there's also a Bee Gees version, though I think that they might have actually recorded it after.
I live in the street, that is what we are. No one in between. How can we
Ghetto Superstar. But okay. They're not just playing Dolly Parton. They re-recorded it with the same melody, but it's such a massive part of that song. It is the hook of that song that probably whatever they negotiated, the songwriting split, is going to be way higher than the guys in War are getting for this single bass line.
That you could argue it's not.
And then when you have like issues like Ice Ice Baby with Queen's Under Pressure, I don't think that's a sample. I think that's an interpolation. And the difference there is they didn't get permission and clear it. They just did it. Right. And so is this a lazy way out? Well, or like trying to cheat the system? It is if you don't admit it. Right. And we'll talk about that
in our plagiarism
in a
episode.
Future episode.
Interesting, because I'm thinking a lot about that Taylor Swift new album. And then there's a lot of talk that some of the songs, like if you look at the music, it is like a match to other songs that like are not Taylor Swift songs.
Oh, wow.
So maybe we'll save that.
Maybe when we talk about plagiarism, you can throw out some examples and we can talk about that.
Very good. Stay
tuned. That's awesome. I don't know about that.
Oh, yeah.
And it wasn't that long when we talked about that album on our mailback episode.
Right.
Okay. So I'm going to, so if we think about the two parts to that guitar riff, the bum, ba, da, da, and then the bum, ba, da, da, which is more sort of steady. Think of there being two kind of rhythmic functions in this song. One of them I'm going to call acceleration.
Okay.
Pushing forward, and the other one I'm going to call stalling, like holding back.
Sure.
So if we think of it like Shaggy and this denial, it's like one of them could be fast talking, the other one would be stammering, right? Mm-hmm. That's the sort of analogy. So like we could hear with the guitar, acceleration, holding back, acceleration, holding back. And they meet in the middle with a boom, this big bass on beat three. And we're going to see, at least I'm going to claim, we're going to see this play out with the vocals themselves, right? Mm-hmm. And so let's listen to that chorus once again. Honey came in and she got me red-handed, creeping with the girl next door. Picture this, we were both butt naked, banging on the bathroom door. How could I forget that I had given her an extra fee? All this time she was standing there, she never took her eyes off me. Oh, yeah. It's like a really vulgar scene. Like, imagine... She's watching. I mean,
like the bathroom.
I don't want to kink shame anybody, but this is supposed to be not consensual on the path of the wife or the girlfriend. Yeah. So let me just say before I break this down, thank you, Shaggy and Rick Rock and team, for making a song with a tempo approximately 95 BPM. Because what that creates, and we'll talk about this in our plagiarism episode, is a clip of the entire chorus and of every section of the song. That is basically exactly 20 seconds.
You love that.
Which is the amount of time that I generally try to aim for in song clips.
So they don't come at us.
To feel like I am. Well, not just to avoid the consequences to your previous thing, but to actually earnestly stay within what I interpret as the rules of fair use. 20 seconds is a good sort of rule of thumb, I think. There's actually no legal backing to that, but that is a commonly observed.
That's like what we consider as the industry standard.
It's one of them, right? Yeah. And 95-ish BPM, quarter notes per minute, gives us
the perfect
an 8-bar phrase that fits
that.
Within that. So thank you. Should I just... there are archives online databases where I could just like search for songs of 95 beats per minute.
Really?
And we could only do... A whole
season of just those.
Just not. Or then there's the season where I really try to freak out the lawyers and I do a bunch of 98 BPMs, just pushing
just
everything
to see,
24 seconds.
We do have a team of lawyers listening to our episodes to make sure we're within
lawyers and neuroscientists and flute professors. Okay. So let's zoom in just on the second phrase of this chorus, just because it kind of serves as a good example here. You've pictured it in your mind.
Thank you
very much, Rick Rock.
Thank you.
We basically have two types of rhythmic figures here that I've already suggested, right? The acceleration, and I'm going to sort of define those as anytime we have fast notes, and they happen to be, this is what we call swinging 16ths.
Ooh,
have you heard swing before?
Yes, I have.
So swing is where you have a couple, you tell us, what does
it
mean when something swings?
One E and a two E and a three E and a four E and a... I'm like, the
okay, wait, do
like
it again. Do it again.
One E and a two E and a three E and
so
a
that's
four.
Straight.
Oh, so the
swing will be
that.
One E and a two E and a three E. So
sounds
compare.
The same
so, thing. Okay,
Except pure, like you're like bopping around in your chair more when you say it. Yeah.
So swing is generally speaking on the eighths. And so you go from one and two and to one and two and three.
There's
and
like a little bit more of a swagger to it.
The second note is late. It's as simple as that. One and two and three instead of one and two and. This is swinging on the 16th note level. So instead of one E and a, two E and a, three E and a, four E and, it's one E and a, two E and a, three E and a, four E and a. Mm-hmm. Da, 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 da. I'm just a little late on half the notes, and it creates a nice little, in this case, kind of hip-hoppy, casual vibe,
it's
right?
It's just like eager and casual.
So we've got
vibe-y.
The swung 16ths that are our acceleration, and then we have very much straight eighths. So we hear in this little phrase both of those.
Picture this, we were both butt naked, banging on the bathroom floor.
So if we zoom way deep in, we've got picture this.
Picture this.
Picture this.
Yes.
Right? Swung. Da da da.
Mm-hmm.
Acceleration. We were both.
We were both.
Same.
Mm-hmm.
Butt naked.
Butt naked.
Yep.
But, but. Straight eighth.
Straight eighth.
Stalling. Holding back. Banging on the.
Banging on the.
Swinging.
Swinging. Bathroom floor.
Bathroom floor.
Straight eighths.
Yeah. Perfect. So we get. Da 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 ba 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 da ba da ba ba.
And it's like kind of a lot for me because what he's doing on the straight is just like really hammering home the visual imagery. And it's not like great imagery. I'm not into it. So it's just like, can we be more vibey about that? Like
more subtle. What are the words that stick out in that phrase?
The ones where he's on doing the straight eighths.
That's right. Butt naked.
Yeah, bathroom floor.
And bathroom floor.
They're, yes. They
and
really
we can see how that relates to the rap verses too. But like, essentially, we've got acceleration, acceleration, stall, acceleration, stall. And it we keep this kind of rubber banding of it that serves to, in my opinion, to pull us through this verse that's very repetitive, but pulls us along and also really emphasizes certain words over others, right? And we do land on beat three, right? That bass is boom, boom, bum, bum. But picture this, we were both butt naked, banging on the bathroom, beat three, right? He hits. Yeah, it's you could picture me just having written and performed this song, right?
I think that's why I picked this song. Now I'm thinking back.
Because like, you want to hear me do it?
It would just be so funny.
So it's an alternation between these two types of rhythms, just like the guitar is set up, right? So I would say we always are going to hear the stalling eighth notes as more melodic also. It's not just that the words stick out.
Yeah.
It's that we have da-da-da-da-da-da-da. We have like little steps and stuff, and then we get leaps and like catchier, butt naked. We get like cooler lines on the eighth
and
notes.
And it's so interesting because when I think of like swing, I think of that as being more like lyrical and intriguing. But in this song, the straight eighths, because they stand out so much, I think, it becomes like a more tender moment almost. I might be going too far into it, but the vibe is so different between these two little phrases.
Totally. And so the second half of the chorus, we have this kind of phrase answering it right after bathroom floor.
How could I forget that I had given her an extra fee?
And we can deconstruct that just
it's the same way.
What do we have here? This is the beginning.
Bathroom floor. How could I forget that I
How could I for what kind of rhythm
a
is that?
Swingy.
How could I forget that I could? It's very, very straight.
Very straight. Yeah.
And so that like answers bathroom floor. How could I?
Okay.
Right. It just echoes it. Right.
Yeah.
So we're still in the and it's very melodic. Mm-hmm. Very pretty line there.
Given her an fast.
Yep.
Halting. Right.
Yeah.
And so we get this long haul, stall, stall, accelerate, stall.
He's like tripping over his words and he's like, you can, it mirrors his like internal conflict. This like, should I, am I right? Am I wrong? What should I do? Like the juxtaposition of these rhythms mirrors the juxtaposition of his like denial, plausibility situation.
Right. And this is the chorus. This is how the song starts basically after the little intro where they're talking. We haven't had a verse yet. We haven't had Shaggy yet, but it's like it starts with a lot more acceleration and the stalls on bathroom floor. But then the second half, how could I fall, is way more stally with a little acceleration. And
right.
So it creates a phrase structure that's rhythmically a story in and of itself. Right.
And that story is like his thought process of like, how could I do this? Like, what was I thinking?
Right. You know. Well, I don't think he's there yet. What was I thinking?
Oh.
Right. There's no introspection yet.
Not
right.
Yet.
Well, how could I forget? No, but it's very egocentric. How could I forget that I gave her a key? It's not about contrition. It's like, how could I have been so stupid that I let her?
Right. It's like self-actualized more than egocentric.
But it's not or is it? Or you're, what does that mean? Sorry.
Self-actualized is like he's seeing a full picture of how he fits in the world.
Yeah, I don't think there's any apology at this point in the song yet, though. All right, so Shaggy comes in. Let's see what kind of rhythmic pacing we have in the verse.
Oh, you pretty woman, access to your villa. Trespass on a witness, all of your cleaner, your pillar. You better watch your back before she turn into a killer. Just review the situation that you call the pinner. To be a true player, you have to know how to play. If she say a night, convince her say a day. Never admit to a word where she say. And if she claim her, you tell her, baby, no way.
And Shaggy's just like the id devil on his shoulder saying, like, just be a dick. Like, just tell her she's
The verse is, well, let's just zoom into one phrase.
Okay.
For this reason and also rhythm reasons.
Oh, you pretty woman, access to your villa.
He's chastising her. Why'd you give her a key, basically? Right. He's not, the verses are him actually coming down on his buddy. Why are you such a dumbass, right? He's not saying you shouldn't have done this, but he's saying, like, how could you be so careless, right?
And
do
that,
you
like,
know?
Ugh, that just rubs me the wrong way. Like,
well, sure, it's a pretty toxic little vibe here. But, like, how many of the Shaggy lyrics do you know to this song?
Probably none, because I have a hard time hearing his mouth noises.
You have a hard time understanding what he's saying?
Yes.
But also, what are the rhythmic figures we get in the verse?
This is just kind of all over the place.
Ba-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba.
Right. And this is
not all,
like,
over the place.
Yeah, they're very regimented.
It is streaming forward, mm-hmm. What I've been calling the acceleration. There is no, what are the lines that you remember from the first chorus? Bathroom floor, butt naked, the eighth notes. There are none of them. It is all da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And none of those words are that important. Nothing against Shaggy that is contribute. I mean, he helped develop the chorus too, I'm sure. But, like, his verses kind of don't matter in this song. The point of the song is in the chorus.
Yeah.
His lyrics kind of just blast by. And it's because there's none of those eighth notes. It's not just his faux drill sergeant way of talking, because we got a Jamaican-American dude and a British-Jamaican dude. And you can only understand one of them,
and
really.
Listen to this. Their vocal timbre is so different.
Absolutely. He's got a very heavy delivery. The other guy's got a very light and kind of pretty delivery.
So pretty.
I would say these specific rhythms he's doing constantly vary, but they don't really matter. And neither do the words even really.
No, it's just about the vibe.
So there's only a few more. Yeah, totally just about the vibe. There's only a few more sections, and let's just observe how this plays out. Here's the pre-chorus.
But she caught me on the counter.
Wasn't me.
Saw me banging on the sofa.
Wasn't me.
I even had her in the shower.
Wasn't me.
She even caught me on camera.
Wasn't me.
She saw the marks on my shoulder.
Wasn't me.
Heard the words that I told her.
Wasn't me.
Heard the screams getting louder.
Wasn't me.
She stayed until it was over.
Who's singing the "It Wasn't Me"? Is that Rick Rock?
And Shaggy, I don't know her backings. I don't actually know.
Right.
It doesn't sound like any of the main characters, right? But if we just zoom in on one phrase for the rhythm.
But she got me on the counter.
Wasn't me.
We've got accelerate, accelerate, stall. And then it's answered. The backing vocal is actually, "It wasn't me," which is like a fast phrase. So that's the only kind of exception to this, in the sense that, that's a fast line that sticks out and is memorable. Whereas the rest of it is sort of easier to miss.
Yeah,
right?
For sure.
So this is kind of like a shorter phrase, right? It's a little bit breaking the trend of, like, these kind of longer melodies. It's almost like the "It Wasn't Me" completes the phrase, sort of. So yeah, I don't know. Not much to say here. It's just more of this combination.
Yeah.
And I've alluded a lot to the bridge section being so different in terms of the introspection. How does that get handled rhythmically? What do we got rhythmically?
I hope I get it right, but I feel like that is straight eighth notes.
Whole time.
Da, 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 da.
If we just listen to one phrase, just count it. Yeah.
One and two and three and four and.
It's just straight.
And, like, there's like a lilting in his voice and the tonal changes here. I mean, the bridge is always like, you know, stands out as being very different, especially in the song. But I think that the change in tone, like the way that he, the way that he's singing and not just the rhythm and the lyrics, it feels more innocent, feels more remorseful, like his delivery is different here.
Interesting. It's also very melodic, right?
Well, that's, I think, another way, like a music way to say what I'm saying.
Well, but his tone is, I think his tone is more vulnerable singing, but also just the line, da 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 da. It's more sing-songy kind of than some of the rest of it. No acceleration. And this happens to be the one moment where you can't yada 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 through it, because this is your internal. We have different rhythmic musical functions, but also lyrical and intentionality meaning functions too, right? The only songs, if we think just like the things that stick out, red-handed, girl next door, butt naked, bathroom floor, how could I forget that extra key? It's like, what are the lines that stick in your brain? It's the ones that are the eighth notes, right?
Yeah.
And some of them are ridiculous, kind of goofy, like butt naked.
Yeah, you sounded great when you sang that. Imagine the song like sung operatically, or like with a real like full voice and just like really humble.
Butt naked. How could I forget that I would?
Imagine if it was like in a musical. Like, I don't know.
We could do it.
I just think that there's a lot of potential for interpolations of the song.
Well, when's the Shaggy jukebox musical coming out?
That's what we need. That's what the people want.
All right. I feel like I can shout out some songs all from about the same era that kind of do the same thing, where we have like different levels of the beat, essentially. So like, here's a song. I never knew the name of this song. I always thought it was called It Must Be the Money.
Hey, Must Be the Money.
That's right. Ride with me, Nelly.
Oh, yeah.
In 2000s. I didn't know that's what it was called.
Yeah, if you want to take a ride with me.
Yeah, I mean, I know it makes sense, but that's not the title I would have thought.
It does sound like the Shaggy song when you think about the swing eighth notes and the straight eighth notes.
Well, because there's a combo of the faster and the slower that helps pace us through the phrase. Take a look at the hook.
Front act, don't know how to act without no vouchers or no boosters, bringing nothing back. You should feel the impact. Shopping with plastic when the sky's the limit and them haters can't get past that. Watch me.
It's really a great song. What is an L, though? I never got that. Smoke an L in the back.
I don't know.
I never
you're the one who would speak to a little more authority than me there.
Hey, now. But like, smoke a J. Maybe they just couldn't say J.
Yeah.
So they went with
the next letter, or one of the next letters.
Well, we can't.
We're both like singing.
We can't do K.
Like, is it the next one?
Yeah.
J K L. Yeah.
But you could see, like, we have a lot of the accelerators. If you want to go into, and then why do I feel this way? It slows it down, and then in the verse, you know, it's hip hop, right? So there's a lot of fast notes, but not only fast notes. Moments that clarify with a slower. I'm really talking with my hands right now, which is
it's so unlike you. Weird.
Yeah. Right. Listeners, it's not unlikely. Okay, here we go. Same era, different style. Papa Roach.
Oh, yes.
Last Resort. Does it happen here?
Cut my life into pieces. This is my last resort. Suffocation, no breathing. Don't give a fuck if I cut my arm bleeding. Would it be wrong? Would it be right? If I took my life tonight, chances are that I might. Mutilation out of sight. And I contemplate suicide.
You for sure loved that song when you were of the age.
Because I've given you so much indication of how much I love nu metal.
You love nu metal. It's like all you talk about anymore.
This was not, I was not, you know, the funny thing about this though is I was like, I was early on the Papa Roach. I'm not a fan of this kind of music as I hope that was facetious. Like the song, I mean, it's kind of nice or whatever. It's cool. But like, I was not a fan of this kind of thing. But a dude I was in a band with, like his big sister was on their street team. And so I'm like a high school student, like probably a year before this album came out or something.
Yeah.
Hey, have you heard Papa Roach?
So
and
much merch.
He had a cassette tape with a roach on it. That was like, my sister gave me this. And it was this song, probably an early version of it. But
the street team.
Street team, you know, like
early influencers.
The teenagers that would go around and like hand out demos and stuff. So we have all these different cut my life into very straight eighths when you compare that to losing my sight, losing my mind. There's like a flow. The pacing grows throughout these few sections of the song, each one with a different combination of kind of pushing and pulling rhythms.
Mm.
And I'm not hating on this song. I actually do like this song, but, you know, it's not, it's definitely not the scene that I would have
been.
Well,
you really got into it just now when we were listening to it.
I was super into it, yeah. All right. Genie in a Bottle, Christina Aguilera, same year, 2000.
Wow, huh? What a year for music. Yep, same thing.
Well, we've got like the chorus is much more athy with a few points where it speeds up. And then that post chorus, I'm a genie in a bottle, very accelerating, right? Yeah. So yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I got.
Where do you stand? Hot topics here. This is the hot topic section between Christina Aguilera and Britney Spears. At this time in the early 2000s, when it was prime time for this type of music, what camp did you fall into?
And I'm not supposed to say neither, because you know the answer was neither
well,
at that time,
I know,
really.
But like,
who would I have listened to
if you were like
back
a,
then?
Yeah.
If I had to listen to one, it would have been Christina.
Why?
I think she was a better vocalist outwardly, at least as I perceived it at the time.
Right.
The music was more R&B, less sort of. It felt more R&B-ish and less sort of just like
pop.
I think now the answer would be Britney Spears,
because of her like icon.
Just. I think I like dance pop more now.
Sure. She's not a strong vocalist.
Not really, no.
I mean,
but she's got a cool delivery.
She does.
That other people have talked about at great length that I don't even need to.
Like a real like fry.
Yeah, there's
voice.
Like fry. There's yeah. like, she's got kind of a weird way of singing that's really unique that I appreciate.
Yeah.
Christina's
I get that.
More of a diva kind of power vocalist. Well, what about you? Back then, who were you more?
Britney or
Christina?
Christina? I'm going to have to go with Brie on this one and say I was all about Mariah Carey because none of it
well,
exists without
say...
Mariah Carey. Sorry.
You...
Tricked ya.
Never Mind the Music is hosted by Nicole Batcher and me, Mark Poppany. I also produce. Please leave us a rating and a review and don't forget to follow. We're Never Music Pod on social media and you can also send us an email at nevermusicpod@gmail.com. Nevermind the Music is part of the Lorehounds Network. Join the conversation by going to thelorehounds.com and hop on our Discord server. Thanks for listening.